Hi, this is Dark Journalist. Today I have the exciting conclusion to our fascinating two-part interview series with Dr. Carmen Bolter on her amazing finds linking Akhenaten and Nefertiti to ancient Atlantis. Now, Dr. Bolter's amazing images were shown here on the Dark Journalist show for the first time anywhere. In our part one episode that displayed evidence that ancient Egyptian artifacts were recently discovered in Turkey, the remarkable find and its dating back to 10,000 BC does indeed change history forever. Now, we've only just begun to unravel this incredible discovery and its full ramifications. In today's episode, we'll actually reveal, for the first time, the burial chamber of an Atlantean princess, and dig deeper into the Egyptian connection to the lost continent. Did those who escaped the destruction of Atlantis come to rule Egypt for thousands of years? Here we go. Dr. Carmen Bolter, Nefertiti, Atlantean Princess, and the Breakthrough of the Century.
The mainstream media is never going to admit it. And there are places in the world that have Egyptian artifacts, as we see now in Turkey, because the statues are there, but they're older and they would have been inherited. So were they emulating them? Were they beings from before? If they knew how to live better and more creatively in the distant past, how can we're in a crisis of values. We don't value balance and psychicness and that sort of thing. We ridicule it.
You know, sometimes it seems that the resistance to new evidence that changes history forever has to do with entrenched power in different institutions clinging to a version of the past that they've learned to benefit from for hundreds of years. The manipulation of mass consciousness to maintain the status quo may have an even deeper and nefarious purpose, however. If it were discovered that an advanced ancient culture did possess high spirituality and high technology, it may cast a dim light on the kind of corrupt leadership that we see around the globe today. If we are heirs to a higher civilization that has been suppressed by institutional control of our past, what are the implications for the massive shift in consciousness that will occur as a result of a discovery of this magnitude? Let's go ask Dr. Carmen Bolter.
Dark Journalist. Go for truth in 2017. The deepest questions, the biggest secrets, the darkest mysteries. Dark Journalist. Go for truth. With top guests like Graham Hancock.
Graham, how do we as a society escape the grip of the deep state in the 21st century?
Rather than spending trillions of dollars every year on building up our armies and our weapons of mass destruction and creating a climate of hatred and fear and suspicion, we should be uniting as a human race.
Catherine Austin Fitz.
Catherine, what is the issue that's holding us back and destroying prosperity?
We have a system which has got a negative return on investment. It's killing human productivity, and where it's going is inhuman.
Linda Moulton Howe.
Linda, you've been fighting against secrecy your whole life. How are we doing in this battle?
There is a kind of energy and synergy that you and I have because we are both trying so hard in so many facets to get to the bottom of what is the truth.
Dark Journalist, go for truth. Visit darkjournalist.com and subscribe now for a special winter discount available for just $39 for one full year. You'll receive exclusive member benefits, including access to the complete high-quality audio archives to stream or download at your convenience, and subscriber-only content, including bonus show material. Sign up for our free newsletter to stay updated on the latest shows. Dark Journalist, this is the year. Now is the time.
You know, we need dark journalists, so just keep doing what you're doing.
Join us now and go for truth.
Well, hello everyone. Today is the day we get to see even more of Carmen's explosive discoveries that will change ancient history forever as we know it. Now, of course, in part one, we showed some of the outstanding images from this mountain enclosure of ancient Egyptian relics. The response so far has been overwhelming, and if I haven't been able to return all of your emails, thanks for hanging in there, because I'm really going to try. Now, that was the first time these images that Carmen is revealing to the public were ever shown. And today, another first. Images of the archaeological dig that shows an Atlantean princess. It is happening here, and it's happening now. Quick reminder to sign up for the Dark Journalist newsletter at darkjournalist.com so you don't miss any of the exciting shows that we have coming up for you. A Carmen, it's great to have you back for part two of our deep discussion on these groundbreaking Akhenaten Nefertiti revelations. Now, we're going to be showing a lot more of this discovery and the compelling images from the dig in this part two episode. But before we do, I want to ask you about the pharaoh Akhenaten and Queen Nefertiti. They are no doubt special figures in ancient history, if only for the sheer changes that they wrought on ancient Egypt and our civilization at the time. But I want to go a little bit deeper here, especially with all these Atlantis connections coming up, and ask you, are we looking at more than just extraordinary people here? You know, is it possible, in your opinion, that Akhenaten and Nefertiti were not really of human lineage, and that there's something about them that's just beyond our understanding?
Yeah. I think that they... It's hard to talk about this in terms of them being a different race, if you will. But if you look at those big, big, big statues they have in the National Museum, it's almost like they got two belly buttons, you know, they distended bellies and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And again, the distended skulls. And so because of this date coming up, and as we mentioned, the carbon 14 makes everything look younger, and this date's coming up at 11,500 years ago, it could be that, I don't know, I'm just wrestling with this in my own head, because the statues are there, but they're older and they would have been inherited. So were they emulating them? Were they beings from before? You know, mm-hmm. like that opens up another layer of how we've been told the wrong thing about that period.
Right.
So it could have been that the people at Amarna perhaps were more ordinary and knew about them from the distant past, because I'm saying that this was a percolation back up from something that was spiritually squished, mm-hmm. and that someone understood that and created a situation and a cultural milieu that allowed for the other way of living to come forward. And that's my point with the New Atlantis, is that if they knew how to live better and more creatively in the distant past, how can, we're in a crisis of values. We don't value balance and psychicness and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. We ridicule it. And the whole thing is, if you don't get caught, it's not wrong. Oh, what is it? Did you see at the Oxford Dictionary has the word of the year. Like every year they add new words. Do you know what the...
I'm almost afraid to find out.
I've got to remember it now. Post-truth is the word of the year.
Wow.
Now, think about that. And I had said in one of my interviews, it may even have been with you, I said, the tragedy of our current culture is that the truth is an option. And somebody pulled that and put it in quotes with my name on it. It went viral on Facebook.
Yeah, that's the opening quote to our first interview. That's a great quote and thoroughly
thoroughly original. Well, it was with you that I said it.
Oh, yeah. Well, when you get on a roll, watch out.
And it is a tragedy, and the truth is an option, because anything you see advertised is a lie. Mm-hmm. You know, it just goes on and on and on and on. And we're so used to being lied to.
Right.
That, you know, what, we accept that, being lied to? But everything we've talked about in this conversation has been controversial, where somebody can say, oh, no, there's a book and it says, you know, something else. I mean, what's the truth?
Interesting. Well, it seems to me in your work, like with the Pyramid Code, for example, you were able to penetrate into these deep truths because you had evidence, very strong evidence in some cases, on one hand. But then you also had an open mind that was leading you to different discoveries. And I guess that's really the magic combination here.
The thing about the Pyramid Code is that people resonated with it and felt like it made sense to them. And it wasn't, they weren't dodging all these, you know, like I find when I watch, you know, a lot of things that I find my defenses coming up because it's wait, maybe, you know, maybe that's not true. So the Pyramid Code, because I was able to keep, you know, my hand on it and make sure the authenticity was there, allows people to feel relaxed when they watch it. Mm-hmm. And then they have to write to me and tell me all about it, that, oh my God, I just know you're right. I knew
that. Well, I've heard a lot of people say that about it as well.
Yeah, but the thing is, we haven't actually lost our instincts. And if something is correct, we know it, we can feel it. So what's knowing? And that's what Hakim says in the Pyramid Code. Knowing is a very deep power.
That's a great insight.
You know, and you can tell if the bird is upset because they're being terrorized by a cat or whatever, or you can tell if they're relaxed. And so sometimes I worry, you know, that we really have lost our way and people don't know how to tell anything anymore. And they're so dumbed down that they're just, oh, well.
Right.
But in fact, we still are, there's certain groups of us that are truth seekers, and we know when something resonates and we know when something doesn't.
Yes.
And that's what we're after here. And again, if it's not good for everybody, it's not good at all. And they've shortened the numbers now. You know, I guess there's 8 people who have the wealth of half the globe.
Yes, I saw that. So Oxfam International came out with that stat, and it's truly remarkable. You know, how did we ever let this happen? It's an important question.
3 billion people have as much money as 8 people. Let's see, is that fair?
Wow. Well, you make an excellent point there. And one aspect that you're bringing forward in the New Atlantis documentary that I find absolutely compelling is the work of James Ernest Brown. Now, we are definitely going to have him on the show soon. But his research around the role of electricity in ancient Egyptian ritual is absolutely fascinating. And I really think that as far as, you know, new schools of thought around Egypt, this is one of the most important.
And look at this. He sent me this. I just noticed it when I went into the Ottoman. This is 16 millimeter footage of Ed Leeds' scallion at Coral Castle.
No.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
Yes, I had it digitized.
Excellent. Now, although everyone probably knows about Ed Leeds' scallion, he created the modern megalith structure called Coral Castle in Florida using mysterious techniques of levitation like the ancient Egyptians did. Now, does the footage show him working? What does it have there?
He's not working. He's entertaining. So he's got some guests there.
That's a rare find.
And James, as a gift for editing the book, he gave me a 3,200-year-old Egyptian cat.
Oh, that's so exciting.
I can show it to you. It's just
okay, yeah, take your time. We got to see this. And I'll take this opportunity to remind everyone to visit darkjournalist.com and sign up for a free newsletter that keeps you up to date on all the new videos that are
up. Got it from a farmer that plowed it up in his field.
Wow, that is really something.
Isn't that amazing? It's bronze, but I can just feel the authenticity in it.
Can we see it again? Just amazing.
It's got a little hole in its ear, so I'm going to find it a little earring.
Fantastic.
But it's got character. Like you can, it's anyway, I'm thrilled.
Well, I'm glad you brought up Egyptian cats there because they certainly worship the magic of cats and incorporated them into their spirit rituals. It's as though they understood that cats possess some special properties.
But what James will say is that there's something about static electricity that comes off the cat when you rub them, and that that was part of their creating electromagnetic energy that they could harness.
I absolutely think he's onto something, and I'm very anxious to learn more about the evidence that exists for the use of electricity in ancient Egypt in these rituals. Of course, there are many examples of ritual artwork that really appear to incorporate this into their spirituality. But again, it feels like a legacy with knowledge being passed down. So we're back to the cycle of this older culture handing down this really deep knowledge. But you actually did a very fascinating experiment with Brown, and I think this is very interesting, where he sat on an Egyptian throne to show you how this conductivity worked in these rituals. Now, can you tell us a little bit about it?
Well, and then he couldn't wear a lavalier mic into his Faraday cage. So he had the door open, and he's got this device that goes, you know, and you can just see the electricity coming off. But then the videographer sticks his hand into the door, and I've got footage where you see the spark going across.
Oh, that's pretty wild. Now, will this be featured in the New Atlantis documentary?
Oh, yeah. We've got a lot of footage of him, and we're working on animations to explain what's going on. But it's pretty conclusive.
Well, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think he got into something a lot of researchers missed, which was the use of electricity in ancient Egyptian rituals. Now, certainly there's some research around the use of advanced technology in ancient Egypt and some other kind of wild theories that didn't have the supporting evidence to back it up.
Oh.
But he did something unique, which was he showed what it was for in a ritual aspect. And the book was unique also. Not sure how that really got missed on everyone's radar, but just great stuff.
Well, and he's writing another one.
Oh, really?
Ancient Egypt's Electrical Power and Gas Generating System.
Oh, that looks interesting.
So he's even looking at the Serapeum and how there's a salt-encrusted stuff on the ceiling and how he thinks that they were making hydrogen gas and storing it in there. The Serapeum, yeah.
You know, what's fascinating is that there was a fantastic book on it about a decade ago about the Giza power plant.
Yeah, that's Chris Dunn.
How did you feel about that?
Oh, yeah, I liked it a lot. And I know Chris. The thing is that, okay, I think that the our propensity for the one right answer hypothesis, which is what school does to us, A, B, C, D, pick one thing. And what we don't tend to embrace is the idea that everything's multidimensional in Egypt, multi-purpose, multifaceted, and then over huge periods of time, it would have been used for different purposes. So I think that's right, and it explains why there's no decorations or anything inside the Great Pyramid, and like you wouldn't put art inside your oven,
right,
or in your drain, kind of thing. And so it does stand to reason that it would have been like a machine, but also the high-level initiates would have used it for out-of-body experiences to practice having control of leaving the body and coming back, so they understood what would happen when they dropped the earthly body.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I think that the power idea definitely works. And Chris has gone on to make sense of a lot of other things, like the so-called boat pits and a lot of the machine tool marks and that sort of thing. No. And the other thing is that he's an engineer, and he's not pretending to be anything else.
Okay.
Right? And so he comes purely at it from that perspective, which I really respect.
Absolutely. Well, the New Atlantis documentary really sounds like it's going to be making serious waves. So that's exciting. We know the Pyramid Code was a huge leap in our understanding of what was really happening in ancient Egypt. But this sounds like even another level that you're going here, the next step up, in a sense. And I know everyone wants it yesterday, including me, and it will be out this year. But I think you've been wise to take the time to make it the right kind of edit and everything.
Well, and also the pacing. You know, what happened with the Pyramid Code is I had several editors, and if we had been editing something about motorcycles, they would have been just fine. But because of the nature of the topic, it was intimidating.
Mm-hmm.
And this is even a little more obscure. You know, you can't just go take pictures of Atlantis. It has to be quite animation-based, right, and pieced together in various ways. So it's extremely precise. And so I've had some editors try, and people aren't as creative thinking as they were, you know. Like, I think that all this GMO meets chemtrails is affecting people in that crisp way. So, yeah.
You know, this is an important aspect that isn't too obvious, really, which is when someone puts themselves out there, like you do, on these very controversial topics, doing deep research, not just a quickie TV special, but layers of cross-referencing for a greater understanding of the entire picture, you actually risk a lot to bring this forward.
Yeah, and the other thing is I triangulate everything. So, you know, if I get one source that seems exciting, it's not enough. I have to have it coming from more than one place. So it's in ancient texts, but it's also verified by astrophysics, for example.
Uh-huh.
And so what I'm ascertaining is that there's four different disasters that occurred. And so a lot of people are completely focused on that 11,600 last one. Well, there's time to have gone round and round the precessional cycles. And I think that Atlantis broke apart a bit at a time, right? There's another thing that, you know, just to get oriented here, what I'm understanding now is that ancient texts and stories point you over here when they mean over here.
Hmm.
They wanted to put a little bit of a code so that we couldn't figure things out, right? And so there's a way that things are written that are deliberately having us look in the wrong place, like Hawara. The stories about Hawara were saying it was the Great Pyramid.
Right.
But it wasn't, right? So once we understand that deliberate code, if you will, and the rest of the story is true, it makes it easier to start deciphering.
So it's misdirection.
It's misdirection on purpose because they didn't want the mundane people to go because it was such a you know, a rich environment with, you know, precious woods and precious gems and all kinds of things. I mean, it was really quite the thing. So, and I'm actually looking to, you know, make a colorful story of, you know, what they ate and what they wore and what they did and how the festivals looked and what the animals were and what they were actually doing with it all and how the society was functioning. So, I mean, that's a tall order.
No question. Now, this Bimini Mayan stage of the Atlantis destruction, which is so well echoed in accounts from Peru and the Inca to the Mayans, the Toltecs, and represents really a large landmass going down somewhere near the Bahamas. When would you place this destruction? You know, was this the last one? Because it seems like there was a height of technological power going on there.
Well, I think it was a worldwide seafaring culture. And it used to be in the old, old days that it was one world ocean and the whole of the, everything that's connected, like water is connected, Pacific and Indian Ocean, everything's all connected. They called the whole thing the Atlantic Ocean. And I think that after one of the disasters, there was a colonization of the planet. So all of the places that have been a candidate for Atlantis, you know, Crete and, you know, like you say, Bimini and High Altiplano in South America and all of these different places must have had some kind of colonization, but it wouldn't have been Grand Central where Atlantis started.
I see.
But the other thing is that these pyramids that we're finding all over the world now are like the Bosnian pyramid that are covered with a certain amount of silt, and then the trees have grown and the trees aren't all the same height. So it's hard to get that sense of that straight-sided, even though if you excavate, you'll see that it is a geopolymer, likely. And but that's because it was pre-diluvian. And so then the flood left the silt that allowed the trees to grow, and so it looks kind of, you know, like a misshapen pyramid structure. But that, they're all over the world, all over the place. There's 240 in China alone.
That's incredible.
And I found 45 of them on Google Earth and plotted them. It is incredible. Dr. Sam's up to 80,000 pyramids in the world, and most of them are covered up and unidentified. But with this geoscans, which is just happening this week, I talked to them the day before I went down to Boulder. If there's a tunnel system underneath and water, it's likely that they're real pyramids. So we can tell without going there. We can tell on the satellite, you know. And then there has to be. And the woman who sent me this material, she lives right there and she looks out her window and sees these pyramid shapes. So she says, "Will you come and see?" I'm like, "I'm going to be there." So she's looking for a project leader, you know, to, you know, set things up. And I've done a lot of international academic cooperation projects. So, you know, like the way Dr. Sam interfaced with the government and they gave him carte blanche to be in charge of it. I don't know if something like that's possible in another country, but that's what we're looking at now.
Well, that sounds like a great opportunity. And you mentioned Dr. Sam Osmanagić there. And of course, he's known for finding the Bosnian pyramid, among other things, many pyramids around the world. But I'm curious where you'd place the age of the Bosnian pyramid that he found.
I saw the dating certificate for a leaf that went, it flew in when they were putting the third and fourth course together of the pyramid. And they excavated and had something that was carbon 14 datable. 38,000 years.
Unbelievable.
It is unbelievable, but that's what's happening. But and I have my reasons for thinking that, you know, if there was four different disasters, this would have been like an evacuation committee. What do we do with the stuff? How do we protect the people? And how do we stop the planet from flipping its magnetic poles? And I think that the worldwide pyramid building initiative had to do with stabilizing the magnetic poles. And I think it worked.
That would explain a lot.
Each of the disasters had a different reason. So there was a comet, and there was intense solar flare activity, which is confirmed by Dr. Paul LaViolette, same timing as it says in the ancient texts. And the place where now it's becoming more accepted, there's one place on the planet that has all of the different characteristic features that Plato talked about. And it's where three tectonic plates meet, and there's three volcanoes. And so slowly that landmass broke apart.
And I know you'll be focusing on that location in the New Atlantis series. So as we ponder now this incredible discovery that links Atlantis to ancient Egypt and also links the figures from the Amarna period in Egypt, Nefertiti, Akhenaten, and Tut, I'd want to I want to look a little more closely at Akhenaten's introduction of the Aten, pictured like a sun disk, in these ancient reliefs. Now, the traditional academic line on this makes it sound like a cult of sun worshippers, basically. But what do you think was happening, really, with the Aten?
Well, they understood the importance of the sun in energetics. And so, you know, you see Horus with the big red thing and the Uranus. Mm-hmm. And this was the importance of the solar flares. So the hands coming off, the energy, it wasn't sun worship. They're worshipers, you know, like they're like worship, you know, is the wrong word, but it was an acknowledgement of how the sun's energy and the cosmic forces influence us. And so there's a new way, and that's another thing that I didn't say, but there's a new way of interpreting hieroglyphic that has more to do with cosmic forces. And everything in Egypt is multidimensional, multi-purpose, multi-layered.
Right.
And so we get it all wrong with that and say, this is an A, this is a B. Well, you think the Egyptians were waiting for English to come along? And we've got 26 letters and they've got 4,000 symbols. Is that the same thing? No, it isn't. So the solar energy was key in terms of understanding how we interact with that, how it affects our brains, how it affects our being. And even chemtrails are interfering with our absorption of solar energy now. And it's having a major effect on people. People are deteriorating in a lot of things. And I think it has to do with the lack of connection to the sun. And even, you know, putting on sunblock and that sort of thing. It's chemicals that you're putting on your skin so that you don't get the solar energy.
Yeah.
Well, how is that a good idea? Oh, take vitamin D. That'll help you.
That is an excellent way to keep us out of the sun. There's no question about it. Of course, solar energy could easily eliminate the need for oil, so we can see deeper motivations as we go here.
So you ask children in China, what color is the sky? And they'll tell you it's gray. They don't even know it's blue.
That is as disturbing as it is interesting. Now, before we get to the extraordinary excavation going on in Turkey that will redate ancient Egypt and some of the new revelations we have for everyone today, I want to ask you if Egyptian relics have ever turned up in another location outside of Egypt. You know, there is this famous story about Egyptian relics being found in the Grand Canyon in America during around 1915, 1916, somewhere in there, and the Smithsonian and others covering it up. Now, what is your opinion on this story, which was widely circulated in newspapers at the time?
Well, when you think about the Smithsonian, you know, collecting artifacts, but even bones from giants and taking them on a ship and dumping them in the ocean, there has been a concerted effort for us to not figure out what's going on. Now, what we haven't accepted about Egypt collectively is that it was worldwide seafaring. And when you look at the boats in the boat museum beside the Great Pyramid, it's got watermarks on it. Mm-hmm. Like it wasn't a ship for the pharaoh to go to the stars symbolically. It's a seafaring vessel that actually looks like the boats in Lake Titicaca. They're built in a very similar fashion. So Egyptians could have left with material and put it somewhere in the Grand Canyon. I mean, there's a stash that was found in Australia that again was hidden, and the Strong father and son team, Evan and Stephen, I think, Strong, they used the geoscans to find the entrance, and then they found a stash down there, but outside was some poorly shaped hieroglyphics. So there are places in the world that have Egyptian artifacts, as we see now in Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so I do think that there's been a lot of effort to hide it.
Okay, so if that story was true and they had come across it, they would have covered it up.
Yeah. When you think about National Treasure, that movie, this is what this stuff is. It's like National Treasure. I mean, it's been collected. But the other thing is that there are some Christian Roman things in it. And so I think that it's, you know, that the people who took this main stash and then added to it, you know, when they hid it. I mean, I'm guessing that it has something to do with the Christians hiding it. Because there's some Christian books and things like that that come later that don't look characteristically similar at all to the stuff I showed you.
Right, right.
So I think that there's a real concerted effort here to keep this stuff from people.
Oh, it's fascinating. It makes a lot of sense to me, by the way. And I've always felt that that story was true, the way that the reports came out. But I was always kind of flabbergasted, like you have no follow-up. There's nothing afterwards. It just falls off the radar.
As did this story with Turkey.
That's an excellent point. But your close involvement is going to make it very hard to deny, especially with the many thousands of views this two-part exclusive is getting right here on Dark Journalists. So there is a point of no return, and we're getting the information out, for this very reason. Now, when we come back, a closer look at the images from the excavation, and I hope you saw part one of this interview called Akhenaten: Discovery Changes History Forever, because that really gives you the setup. But here in part two, we're going to show you a whole lot more. We're coming back for the final round with Dr. Carmen Bolter. Stay with us.
Go deeper with Dark Journalist. Subscribe now and you'll have access to the complete audio archives to download or stream at your convenience. Receive advanced updates and discounts on Dark Journalist events. Enjoy exclusive subscriber-only content. Go deeper with Dark Journalist. Visit darkjournalist.com and subscribe now for a special winter discount available for just $39 for one full year. Dark Journalist, the truth is never easy.
They were sitting there filming, a little saucer came from, came flying over their heads, put down three little landing gear and landed right out on the dry lake bed. And they picked up their cameras and started over toward it, filming as they went. And when they got in fairly close to it, it lifted up, put the gear back in the wheel wells, tipped up, and took off at a great rate of speed.
Dark Journalist will go there.
What are the implications for the massive shift in consciousness that will occur as a result of a discovery of this magnitude? Let's go ask Dr. Carmen Bolter.
Hidden technology.
So in other words, the possibility exists that you have here a machine that is manipulating magnetic fields on a planetary scale that has nothing to do with particle physics.
The black budget.
But there's no such thing as getting away from the corruption, because it is literally, it is now integrated into every economy in the globe.
Geoengineering.
I'm talking about right down to the DNA level. Imagine that you have now the microprocessors and sensors, along with everything else, into every human body.
For more deep interviews, special reports, and documentaries, visit darkjournalist.com today. Dark Journalist, the truth is never easy.
And we are back. This is Dark Journalist, and I'm speaking with Dr. Carmen Bolter, whose new documentary series, The New Atlantis, is poised to go one step further than her highly successful and insightful Netflix documentary series, The Pyramid Code. Now, Dr. Bolter made history in her previous appearance on this show by showing us exclusive images of an excavation in Turkey that she's been closely involved with and advising. The radical redating of ancient Egypt is at stake, as is the link to Atlantis. And finally, and perhaps most significant of all, the links of Atlantis to the pharaoh Akhenaten and Queen Nefertiti. Now, this is history-making material, and we're going to show you more today, including an Atlantean princess and other things associated with this dig. Now, before we go to the earth-shattering images, I want to ask you, Carmen, how you think the world of archaeology will respond to your revelations? You know, we saw what the media did, along with the core of the academic world, to Robert Schoch and Robert Bevall when they redated the Sphinx with strong evidence, trying to limit their progress and get in their way. Now, how do you think the culture will react to this amazing find? You know, will they accept this new history?
Yeah, I think so. And I'm not, but the mainstream media is never going to admit it. But there's loads of things that have misled us so that we can't figure it out. And carbon-14 dating is one of them, because it makes everything look younger mm-hmm. than it is, and it's easily contaminated. So I was at a scientist conference. I called it the Sitchin Conference, because I met Zachariah Sitchin there in Portland in 1996. And on the Monday after the conference, they had a roundtable discussion with these scientists, who were positively encyclopedic. and they decided to discuss dating methods. And one of them said that they took one sample and divided it into 14 parts and sent it to 14 labs and came back with 14 dates. So it's not reliable, and especially after 30,000 years, it just breaks down and makes everything look younger. So there's different dating techniques, photoluminescent, thermoluminescent, potassium argon, various ones. But the labs are more obscure and super expensive, but there is some kind of a thing where nothing's supposed to look older than 6,000 years. So Klaus Donne sent a sample of something that he thought was pushing 1 million years old, bones of a giant, actually. And it was in the lab for a photoluminescent lab for a year. And he's like, where's my sample? Where's my, you know? And they called him in and said, okay, come and get it. And they said, well, we're doing this for free for you because we've had it for a long time. And it's 5,820 years old. So they found it was older. They didn't know what to do. And so the labs are corrupt. So, you know, so we're working against a lot of different things that are preventing us from figuring it out. We're figuring it out anyway. But the other thing is that most people who say they're doing research aren't collecting data. They're not working with real things. They're recycling other people's stuff, and it's a literature review, and then they come up with their own conclusion.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very hard to get anywhere without new findings, that's for sure. Now, it's interesting to me what you said about the labs also, because these people, when they run across this evidence that contradicts history, they don't want to stick their necks out and suddenly become known as the lab that redated ancient Egypt. You know, there's all sorts of payback for that, I'm sure. But you mentioned giants there also. And, you know, you've witnessed an oversized sarcophagus before in Egypt, and you've done a lot of deep research on this. There are so many accounts of giants and the evidence being hidden. Now, what do you make of this?
Well, one of the things that happened in that last disaster, 11,660 some years ago, was four different species were wiped out. One was hobbits, miniature, dwarf. One was giants. One was Homo erectus, and probably Cro-Magnon. So two species that, you know, approaching humanness. Well, I guess you're not going to say that the midgets and the giants weren't human.
Right.
But, and the word human is, you know, too loose for this. But so what we're finding of giants somehow remained from that extinction. So, for example, on Easter Island, everything that's underground is giant bones. And they can measure with geoscans the size of the bones in proportion. And then they do a separate, it's almost like a barcode. If the barcode in the grocery store is going to say the size of the package, the flavor, who bought it, so that they can restock the shelves. So the logarithm, one for water, one for bone, one for precious metals, right? Each of them can see, and then they can analyze with just that, looking only at the bones that are underground. And what's happening with these scans is as time goes by, the reliability and validity increases because when a government will look for underground rivers in California or diamonds in Brunei or whatever, they're finding when they excavate and dig the exact precise location and the material that these scans have been predicting. And so as time goes on, there's more to validate that these scans are accurate. So we're really fortunate to have them because governments aren't necessarily going to let you go excavate in terms of the sacred sites.
Right.
So, it's pretty interesting because that makes sense. That's why there aren't that many. That's why we don't find them now, but we're finding evidence of them. But the whole thing of the distended skulls has more room for greater brain capacity, but also an extended pineal gland, which gives all the psychic, you know, intuitive, telepathic kind of abilities that we have had smashed out of us. And so when people talk about distended skulls, there isn't so much of a distinction between the ones that are fake and the ones that are real. And so Klaus Donne has given me photographs of an 8'6" giant from Bolivia with a distended skull. And Marcia Moore has been using Mudbox to put the face back on. And we together were channeling who this being would have been. And we knew right away it was female. And that's part of the New Atlantis.
Uh-huh.
She's working on the eyes now.
Oh, it sounds intriguing.
But she came up here to Vancouver Island because there's evidence of distended skulls in the native Indians here. And I saw the pictures of them. So, and they weren't from binding, but what would happen, because these beings had magic, if you will, when the next generations came along and they weren't distended, they started to bind the heads. But you can see the marks of whatever they were using to bind it. It leaves an impression in the skull. So they're not all natural, and I think it's exceedingly important to notice which were natural and which weren't.
Yeah. So it's an imitative activity.
Yes.
Now, what I find so interesting on this is that the alien researchers, and as you know, I believe in off-world cultures, and we do a number of deep shows on UFOs here, but the researchers can sometimes see alien traces in ancient locations everywhere. And I feel like that approach is missing the real mystery of Atlantis and these forgotten cultures, because their higher spiritual connections, their psychic development, I mean, we're talking about advanced beings right here. You know, we don't need alien visitors to explain that. You know, the Atlantean initiates, for example, are just as incomprehensible in the mystery school traditions and things like that.
Well, advanced being, and the thing is, okay, this is me talking now, not copying it from anybody,
okay.
But we're all in our cars, on our bicycles, on our scooters, okay, and we make up that they're going to have vehicles, so then they're ETE in their ships, and they come in their ships, but actually, they can shapeshift, they can, you know, what's channeling, you know, another being comes in and borrows the body for a while and trans-channels, conscious channels, they don't need, a vehicle can be a body as well. So we get all caught up in that. But again, this one right answer hypothesis, you know, Anunnaki, but it doesn't explain anything. It doesn't tell you when or who or how or what they did or what the Anunnaki, you know, aliens and you know, virus, aliens, anything, aliens. It's too easy. And that's what we're looking for, the answer to the give the teacher so that we pass the test.
Uh-huh.
Now, the other thing is it turns people into repeaters, if you will.
Oh, yeah.
The parrots. And so when people are talking about the politics in the States, you know, like I'm listening through what they're saying, you know, to how, and I'm going, oh, they watch CNN. They watch Fox. They listen to Alex Jones. And people, you know, take the story in that they hear and repeat it. But they're not processing it. And so, and school has damaged us all. And so, you know, to come up with something original, and to trace how it would have worked and to demonstrate why you could be right. And that's what I keep saying, triangulation. So I start out with all these different storylines. But if I can't support it in more than one way, in more than one discipline, I drop it.
Uh-huh.
But along the way, new ones come up, right?
Yes, no question. And you make a good point here, which is there can be a lot of planned and organic distortion when we go outside of the normal channels of thinking. Some things are so clearly engineered to discredit the alternative research space, like the flat earth meme, for example. And I could name, you know, many of, I could just sit here and give you a list all day, but they seem to be designed to take the alternative branch of investigation out of the picture completely.
Well, sure. That's the no more fake news. But I mean, they're making up stories all day, every day.
Yeah, right.
And I think that most investigative journalists who worked in the field when, you know, Reuters and Associated, and they narrowed it down to 5 or 6 different corporations, you're not investigating anymore. You're getting the story and repeating it. So if you were a journalist before?
Oh, yes.
Right. So you're a perfect example of starting your own show and continuing to investigate, finding the truth and looking around corners. And then that's, to me, that's the real news.
Definitely.
And, you know, the little ticker tape goes across and they have to say who did it and when. And then the case is closed. And whether they're right or not, they find somebody to accuse. That's not news.
I couldn't agree with you more. And one of the biggest reasons I do what I do is that the corporate media simply doesn't tell the truth. So speaking of the truth, we have a selection of images set up now from this historic excavation in Turkey of Egyptian artifacts. And my last question before we get started is this, and it's regarding Atlantis, but in all your research, Carmen, what is the link in our everyday lives? You know, what activity can we point to and say, this is a direct descendant of the days of Atlantis? What would that be?
You got good questions.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to say it. Cirque du Soleil.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Acrobats, all the stuff they do, magic tricks. Think about Crete and the being doing a handstand on the back of a bull. acrobats with animals, telepathy with animals. So they had horses, they had whales, they had dolphins. So they would do this. They would, the horses would have no bridle, no saddle, and they would telepathically, you know, get them to do things, lay their head down in the lap, that kind of thing. And instead of using a whip, they were using a wand, right? And so rhythmic gymnastics with hula hoops and the ribbons.
Yeah.
Right? And most recent thing, and this it's interesting because it's like, why do I keep thinking that figure skating has something to do with Atlantis? You know, because it, to me, they're riding these waves, right? And that when they're really tuned in, they're channeling something and they're spinning around this energy. So I saw this gala thing where there was a hula hoop, a metal ring that was suspended on cloth, and this woman was figure skating, and then she'd go and wrap herself into the hula hoop, if you will, and then the hoop went up, and then it came back down and dropped her down, and she kept skating. And I thought, that's Atlantean. But how would they have done that if it was tropical and the real place of Atlantis was on the equator? The rest of the world was in an ice age. They were seafaring. And it just hit me like a ton of bricks. And so all those sorts of things, you know, like musical rides. And so there were three kinds of horses that I'm ascertaining that were there: Arabian, Frisian, and Andalusian. And Andalusia, that's where a lot of people think Atlantis is.
Of course. And we can keep in mind that the legacy from Atlantis is there for those who want to discover it. So let's do a little discovery right now. First, let's briefly show the initial images we released last week that you gave us to show the public, Carmen. Astonishing. The sarcophagus, highly resembling the one in Tut's tomb. Breathtaking in its detail. And here, the statues of Amenhotep III, Akhenaten, and assorted gods of ancient Egypt. Just staggering in its implication. Initial dating, 10,000 BC. Completely rewrites history. Now let's get into the new ones.
But there were some coins. Well, look at these. I mean, they almost look like Smarties. But there's ones that are the exact thing from Knossos.
Amazing. They look like they're in excellent condition, and again, from a later time period here, so there may be a tradition of hiding artifacts in this mountain.
Until they basically had to stash it. Look at this for a bronze.
Oh, that is almost Grecian looking.
I know, it's just simply amazing. And all this goddess stuff.
Huh.
Right, this is how the pictures came to me.
Oh, do you ever wonder about your amazing luck in these matters? You seem to be a magnet for them.
Right? And so how that ended up in my, you know, hands is remarkable to me, you know, but it's true. So I was told that James Ernest Brown was sending me the 16 millimeter footage of lead scallion. The next morning is when these pictures started to come across in one of my meetings.
That's fascinating.
And, you know, and then when the geoscans guys, gag order was lifted, he contacted me. I mean, you got to understand, for me, I'm like, how is this happening?
Unbelievable.
You know, it's totally great and amazing. And even the idea of where I'm called to go next, you know, in Europe, and there's possibly pyramids there. It's like, what is this? It's like, it's quite...
Well, you're getting all these signals as you bring Atlantis to the surface, it seems like.
So look at this one, even has an elephant from Atlantis. It's an Atlantean elephant. And this is a lamp that has two different spigots. This is the kind of stuff they're finding. Isn't it amazing?
Well, that these different finds are all related to one major excavation is very interesting.
And look at this.
What is that?
A miniature mummy.
Wow. Unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, these are great. These are absolutely stunning. All right, we've saved the best for last. Evidence is pointing to the fact that this represents an Atlantean princess of extreme antiquity. The sarcophagus dating came back 10,000 BC. This could, in fact, be older.
Yeah, and let's just keep the conversation going here. This is a wooden life-size statue that must be Thai. So those are jewels inlaid into gold. Oops, same one. Look at the headpiece. Look at this stuff. Isn't that just incredible?
Wow.
I know, super wow. Okay, so go ahead. What were you
saying? Looking at an Atlantean crown.
Yeah, yeah. It's a crown that goes with this, and it goes with this outfit. So the jewels,
oh,
see
okay.
those?
Okay, I see.
Breasts? Maybe not, because she's on her side. But when you see I've seen other ones where it's actually those pants that gather at the ankle.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a life-size statue.
This, from all the data, is an Atlantean princess.
Yeah.
The fact that she's linked with the Amarna artifacts is suggesting a lineage, perhaps Atlantis to Egypt. That's what it looks like. We're going to need to explore the gap of time from 10,000 BC to 1300 BC and Amarna, and that's Atlantis to Egypt, and who this Atlantean princess was, and the legacy into Egypt.
Well, and I always said that there was, you know, that the patriarchal Egypt started in 3113 BC, coinciding with the Mayan calendar. Let's not forget that. And then became increasingly patriarchal and less spiritual. But then in the 18th dynasty, something started to percolate up with Hatshepsut. And there was also something going on with the solar flares that were preventing boys from surviving. And Morris Cotterell talks about that. So fertility was definitely in question, and a lot of the boys were stillborn, which is why they were having trouble finding somebody for the throne. But they were also returning to the Aten instead of the Amun, right?
Exactly.
And Amun means darkness, and we still say Amen, which I won't say. So, yeah, I think that they were percolating up a memory, and they broke away from and closed the temples because it was corrupt. And on that note, you know, God sent the flood because the Atlanteans were mixing their DNA animals and, you know, and have you seen a human ear growing on the back of a rat now?
Right.
And so if corruption is causative for a flood, that's not exactly adding up now, because we sure have enough corruption.
Absolutely. And I know we're going to have many questions on these incredible artifacts.
Yeah.
And more research is being done as we speak, but what an incredible collection that will really change our perspective on ancient Egypt and Atlantis forever. Just amazing stuff, Carmen. Now, before we go, tell me about the turn of events with the military crackdown near the site in Turkey.
So they were sending me these pictures, and they were getting ready. I said, well, they're not professionally photographed. I mean, can't I come and take pictures? And they said, sure. And then next thing you know, Turkey's closed.
Wow. Are you still in contact with these people? Excellent. That's a major plus. Now, I want to go on the record here and say that this could be the breakthrough find of the century. It looks like that to me, really. And I'm so glad that you decided to share it with us exclusively here at Dark Journalist. It's very special, and I'm honored we could reveal your work to the world. Now, the difficult part with the military situation means what to the status of the excavation now?
They locked the door. And even the wife, the sister of the woman that was doing the internship, hasn't even seen it.
Oh, boy.
I have 147 pictures and 9 videos.
Now, do you think it is going to, you know, I mean, this is really major. It's a crucial find. The artifacts and the fact that you have it, I think, is very important. Now, if the military gets their hands on it, do you think they'll try to remove it from the record?
Too late. I got the pictures.
Well, you're really a woman who lives her truth, so we can all take heart in that. And I'm impressed with the unseen messages that you get around these situations. Just fascinating.
Yeah, well, and I've listened to that. And a lot of times, spirit, like, they drag me around. There's no doubt about it. And they often will tell me what to do before they tell me why. So now when spirit gives me a little bit and then they don't give me any more, I'm expanding my capacity to receive it or something like that. And so now I really respect that. Like, if they don't give me the whole story, but most people have no idea what that even means.
Or, right.
You know, to receive some kind of information like that. But look, I mean, I've been at it for a long time, and it's fascinating, totally. I mean, I'm living it, and I'm still completely dumbfounded by the whole thing.
Well, you're the living proof, and you have incredible insights. And just look at all the discoveries that you've made. It's really fascinating. Carmen, you're making history, and thank you for being here. And let's really keep in touch on this.
Okay, please.
And by the way, when I go to Egypt, I want to go on one of your tours, because that would be an incredible experience. I can only imagine.
Someone's asking for one next year at this time.
Sounds excellent.
Wrapped around equinox, so maybe we can start booking that.
That is amazing. I'd love to have the head start. Thank you again for the amazing insights and discoveries, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Thank you. Nice to see you. Take care. Bye.
Bye, Carmen. Thank you for joining me for this fascinating part two episode with Dr. Carmen Bolter on Nefertiti, Atlantean Princess, and the Breakthrough of the Century. You can find more deep interviews, documentaries, and special reports at www.darkjournalist.com. You can also subscribe here to our YouTube channel to receive the latest videos. See you soon.
Subscribe to our newsletter at darkjournalist.com to stay updated on the latest shows.